Amen. So one more walk with a little Presbyterian PowerPoint presentation, and though Shelby calls it Presbyterian Pictionary. Let's should have contests and send my pictures out on social media and people can guess what on earth he's saying. So we started this whole series with a sense of a boat on the water, which is really an apt illustration because in many ways we are our own boat. We're surrounded by other boats, which is what we call the church, but in essence, the gospel and the word of the Lord has to come to an individual on how it is that they are to live their lives and follow him faithfully. And the image in Scripture, and it comes again in Isaiah, is this image of an east wind. East wind coming, and an east wind that can do one of two things. East wind is the thing that scatters that which is dross, that which is just flaky and flimsy and without substance or weight, or it can be the very thing that is actually moved by the east wind with power in the direction that God leads it. And what we said was that in the midst of winds, that obviously because of winds produce heavy seas, that the way in which you move forward in life and in faith is not by going perpendicular to waves and the wind, because the waves catch the sails and blow it over. We don't go running away from the wind because it's the very thing that causes your boat to nosedive, that you have to angle your boat a little bit off center, either this way or that way, and use the wind in the sail to lead you forward. It's fascinating that the very way in which you move forward in sailing is that you do so using the power of the wind given to you, but you can't tackle it straight forward. I love that image. Straight on into the wind just stops everything. You can't take it on. So you angle it and you use a power that is not your own to be able to sail into the wind. And we've used that image over and over again with texts like Exodus and the parting of the Red Sea. We've used that with Ezekiel. We've used that with Job, that the very way in which he tackled his own pain was not to, he had buddies saying, go this way, go this way, go this way. And Job had a good old fight with God towards the end of the book, saying, I'm kind of mad at you. And the Lord just, in essence, said to Job, at the end of the day, I'm the one who designed it all. I'm the one who's guiding and leading you. You got to lean into me. And the image still proved true, that Job, in his questions, they went away. He says, I've questioned you once, I've questioned you twice, I'm not going to question you anymore. So I'm just going to trust. And the Lord actually brought him through that and blessed him even more after the fact. Brian talked last week about Ezekiel and the wind blowing through the valley of dry bones. And today we want to talk about Isaiah and actually the prophets. You'll see this coming up a bit in Jeremiah. Is this sense of wind, if the first week was power, I'm sorry, the first week was kind of redemption, the saving power of wind, and the second week was the sovereignty of wind, that is to say that it's all for a purpose. And Brian talked about this new life that comes through wind. The last one we want to talk about today is its power. How does its power function? So, this is why series like this are kind of fun, because I suppose I've gone sailing a few times, but to a certain degree, I'm blowing wind on what I know. And folks have been coming up to me and telling me how it works. And so I'm going to do that as well this morning, knowing that I just read it in a book. Looked it up online, right? So fascinating thing about power, and this will be heading somewhere. This isn't like a illustration without a point, is the power piece, just to telegraph where we're heading, the power piece is such that the greatest amount of power that we get, it doesn't come from us, but it comes when everything is kind of stripped away. And there is a tightness in the sail that moves us forward. And in our own life, the Lord in Isaiah is stripping away a lot of things down to its bare bones minimum. And actually, that is the point at which the boat moves fastest and with the most purpose. And the same thing we'll see goes through our own lives as well, that everything else we thought was essential and necessary for how we move forward is in fact things that really become drag rather than lift. And the lift is what we want to talk about this morning, and the power of God in his redemption. So, if you've got your boat, you know, this is the front to back. I know there's words for that. Aft, whatever. what I love about the illustration, actually, is that if the wind's coming this direction, right? Which is creating an angle. Got it? In the books, they use this word. Apparent wind. You don't get to say for the next 3 hours it's going to be at 10 degrees north northeast off of direct east. Isn't that great? Apparent wind. Jesus himself says you do not know which way the wind blows. So it's your best guess. And in 5 minutes, you're going to have to change your best guess. In another 5 minutes, you're going to have to change your best guess. Does that make sense? So now you need your sail. Okay? Let's say that's kind of the, here's the shape of it as the wind is hitting it. This is off the line. Is that this piece here behind the sail, this is the sail, is your drag. It's another great word, drag. Perpendicular to the sail will be a word called the lift. And what ends up being right here is what they call sail force, which is the sum of a positive number and a negative number. That is to say, you factor in the way in which your sail is moving with the high pressure coming this way and the low pressure behind the sail. Interestingly, when you look at diagrams of sailing online, it talks a lot about the design of an airplane craft wing. Same thing. Lift, drag, and the force, okay? Yes, may the force be with you. And you continue to try to get as much lift and as little drag as you can in the process. And if you have hardly any wind at all, you'll increase your angle and you'll have a much wider sail. But we're talking about life in the midst of a heavy wind, which, interestingly, you'll use less of your sails at a tighter angle of your sails in order to create the sail force that you need to move into that wind. And you can never actually get to where you're going there. You have to go this way and then what they call tacking and go this way and keep moving side to side to try to get to where you want to go. But the key piece is to maximize with your sail the lift and minimize the drag such that you can move forward efficiently and with strength. Does that make sense? I know there's a lot of equations that you could do in this, but you would think that a boat with a sail, you'd want to maximize as much sail as you can get. And the interesting thing is that's not really how it works in a heavy wind. The sail actually becomes the very thing that could really blow a boat over. You want to have it as tight as you can get it. You want to have the sail as taut as it can be. It could be almost looking like a sheet of paper with a little bit of curvature to it, and yet have the toughest and the strongest force so that it can move forward. The angle of attack becomes something that's stripped down to bare bone minimums. And in the letters of Isaiah and Jeremiah, we see them railing against people who themselves have a lot of drag in their lives. They have them being pulled down in profound ways. In verses prior to the ones that I read for this morning, the kind of things that the Lord's hand is against are the very things of lies and wickedness and unjust lawsuits and conceiving mischief and giving birth to iniquity. Deeds of violence in their hands, their feet run to evil, they are swift to shed innocent blood, they don't know peace, they don't know justice, they are profoundly selfish in all that they do. And therefore, there's this verse in verse 9 that says, what is the equation that we find ourselves in? What is the wind and the waves that are coming against us? It says this: justice is far from us. Righteousness does not overtake us. We hope for light and behold darkness, and for brightness, but we walk in the gloom. The drag in our lives is profound and strong. And yet we want to sail. We want to live a life that actually is going somewhere. We were all made for it. We were designed for it. St. Augustine himself would say, our hearts have been made for you. And that we are restless until we find our rest in you. We were all made to move forward in this life in the direction of a God-centered way, and yet Isaiah describes the reality in which we find ourselves, the world as it is, as well as our hearts as it is. And such is the problem of the disaster we find ourselves in, that the Lord himself, in his displeasure, realized that there was no one, not one, able to come in and to fill the gap. And so therefore it says his own arm brought salvation and righteousness upheld him. He put on righteousness as a breastplate and helmet of salvation on his head. He is the one who is the Redeemer. And it says that this, that he's going to come like a rushing stream which the wind of the Lord drives. Other translations use the word breath of the Lord. It's ruach. In the New Testament, spirit is pneuma. The spirit of the Lord is something that is literally translated as well, wind. Living wind that blows. Into the midst of the drag that we have on our boats of our own making, the world in which we live, we have this competing force going in the exact same direction. That if without any lift, we would just be pushed back, completely destroyed, crashed upon the rocks. But this wind is something that comes as the power of the Lord, the power of the Lord to come in and to blow. And all throughout Isaiah, it talks about this wind either picking up the dust and blowing it away so that it is no more. That's what the text says. Or this wind that blows such that those who turn from transgression are also brought in and saved. Power that comes through this. The power of God. The text that I talked about with the kids this morning was from 2 Corinthians 4:7. And it really describes the life that we have, a life of struggle. It says this, "We have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this surpassing power belongs to God and not to us." And it goes on to describe this. "We are afflicted in every way but not crushed, perplexed but not driven to despair, persecuted but not forsaken, struck down but not destroyed, always carrying in the body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies. Therefore we do not," he says, "lose heart." As we look to things that are not seen, rather the things that are. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. You can imagine what it would be like on a boat in storms, in waves that you fear might overtake the ship and sink it. You could imagine yourself being on a boat being hit by winds that seem to change direction without a moment's notice. You can imagine yourself looking at wind and waves just like the disciples looked at them when they were with Jesus. He was sleeping on the boat in the Sea of Galilee, saying, "Do you care about us? Are you with us? You're sleeping and we're trying to bail water." To which Jesus gets up and says, "Oh, ye of little faith." I wouldn't have done any better had I been on that boat. What would be said to them would be said of me as well, "Ye of little faith." The perils are real. But Paul describes within this, the Spirit of God that is actually a power that enables us not to be driven to despair, not to be crushed, not to be lost at sea. Because it is a power that we understand is not from us, but it is only from the Lord. That we see the way in which his hand is working in our midst. What we need in our life is lift. And lift becomes powerful in our sails when everything else that we thought would give us speed and direction becomes, on further inspection, to be absurd. To be things that we've devoted ourselves to that have nothing to do with what's needed to get through. In the midst of the critical moment, it does not matter at all how nice your boat looks. It does not matter what beautiful seas you've already sailed. It does not matter what is in the picture books or the stories to tell. What matters is in the moment. What is the power that is pushing you forward in the midst of what you're facing? What is the strength for you to move forward and to trust that there is a power not your own that will see you through? Everything that we thought was essential, including all the extra sails, become in the midst of the heat of the moment to be superfluous and actually a drag. Things need to be tightened down. Things need to be taut. Things need to be so strong on the sail so that we can harness a power that is not our own. Everything else needs to go away. What Isaiah is describing is the power of God that comes into a selfish life, such that they begin to see the power in the Redeemer's hand. A selfish society, a selfish life of dishonest means has to be changed, and he does so through his own power and through his own wind, such that in the aftermath of it all, the very thing that animates us, Isaiah says, is the holy breath or spirit of the Lord in our mouths and on our children's mouths. Everything that Job complained about became in the end something that did not help him move forward. He had to see that there was a power of God at work in him that he could not explain, but that he could say with his heart and with his mind it was good. I want to quote the lyrics from a song that I'll bet no one has heard. There's a guy, artist, a Christian artist named Steve Taylor. He wrote a lot of lyrics for Newsboys songs over the years. But he formed a band, a long time ago. I'm old. And it was a band called Chagall Guevara. And it was just a strange band, but there was a song in it called Violent Blue. And the song is all about coming into contact with the selfish life. And when you look into the eyes, he says, what you see there is a violent blue. There's color there, but it's just being directed in the wrong places. And it gets to this bridge where the person questioning this selfish life is saying, listen, at the end of the day, I don't believe it's the way you were raised or the cards you were dealt or a poor self-image. I just think you love yourself too much. Do you want to rule some sovereign state? Do you want to smother in all that hate? Get away. Throw it down and lose yourself. The lyrics are stunningly profound. You have to like rock and roll guitar to like the song, though. Isaiah would say the same thing from the words of the Lord. Just don't believe it's the way you were raised or the cards you were dealt or a poor self-image. You just love yourself too much. And you love yourself too much such that all the things that you think will get you ahead in this life are drag on your sails. Paul will say in Romans very clearly, there's no one righteous, no, not one. No one can say, look at me. And because of this, the kind of lift that was necessary was pretty profound lift, that no one stepped up. God himself had to send a redeemer to Zion. He is the one who had sent the breath, the wind of the Lord, to give us wind into our sails, a lift force that minimizes drag, strengthens lift, such that the angle of attack can get us to where we need to go. And that is the presence of the Spirit of God in our lives. Do we use our heads? Absolutely. Is wisdom a part of our DNA and our bones when we follow the Lord? It should be. Proverbs should be on our lips. Is there an understanding of eternal truths in this? Yes, there absolutely is. But there is power in it. And this power is the Spirit of God that allows us to move forward with a strength not our own. Such that we no longer become incredibly anxious or fearful when the wind changes on us or the waves become higher. We adjust the angle, we trim the sails, and we lean into it. I mean, what else does it mean to say that the Spirit that is upon us now are the words of the Lord put into our mouths by him, and the words of the Lord put into the children's mouths, and the words of the Lord put into our children's children's mouths? What does that mean if it does not mean the lift that the Lord gives from his wind, his ruach, his powerful breath, is the very thing that we lean into, regardless of how high the waves might be? We don't turn to the left or to the right or run away. But we've also learned, as much like Job, that our complaint is ultimately not with anybody else but with God, and he wins. And then we fall off a bit and we realize who he is good. What he has in store is good. What he's done is good, and what he will one day complete will be good through and through. Isaiah wants us to be honest about the drag we've got. Flabby, flappy sails. We need to own it and tighten it up. But don't confuse the tightening of the sail to power of your own. It's still not yours. But the tightening up allows his power to do what it's always intended to do. Move us forward, pressing on in faith to the life that he's given us. A life of forgiveness, a life of freedom, and a life of joy. Yes, even in the eye of the storm. The power of God is that which is present in these jars of clay to show us that it's from him and not from us. Let's pray.